It is time for the single coolest sports show in the country, The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics.
You've got Matt Bonner, who my notes tell me is a sandwich blogger named Red Mamba. I mean, how can you not like a guy like that?
And the Red Rocket knocks down the triple.
Red Rocket, I'm telling you, Red Mamba might not miss a shot. He might not miss a shot.
Just like in politics, in the instructional video business, you need credibility. You want credibility? I'll give you credibility. Hey, Tim, what's my nickname?
The Red Rocket.
No.
The Sandwich Hunter.
No. Try again.
The Medium Fundamental.
And welcome to The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the program. We had a great show for you today from Fenway Park. Trade deadline specials in Cooperstown, the National Baseball Hall of Fame, over the weekend for the inductions of Tim Raines, Ivan Rodriguez, as well as Jeff Bagwell. Interviews coming up from Cooperstown, including Red Sox legend Wade Boggs and Andre Dawson as well, coming up for you here on the program. We'll also hear from the legendary Brooks Robinson, greatest third baseman ever to play the game, and we'll check in on the Red Sox at the deadline as well. We welcome in Matt Bonner here for the first portion of the program. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great, Chris. I got to be honest with you. I'm here in the T-Dot, that's Toronto, Ontario, at a neighborhood Jamaican jerk chicken spot.
Yeah.
So when the chicken comes up, I might have to cut this thing short because I am starving.
You know, I don't blame you. And if I were in that position, I would probably do the same thing. I was able to eat a couple slices of pizza before we got started.
Let's be
here.
Honest, what is there anything exciting going on in the NBA right now?
There is really no reason for you to be on the show today, other than the fact that you're
literally nothing.
It is kind of your
on.
Show. So we could talk about Clark's Trading Post. You were there. We could talk about the Sam Carey event coming up on Friday, Sneakers and Speakers. It's just not called that anymore. It's called the Rock On Fest. It's coming up in just a little bit as well.
Yeah, let's plug some stuff. We'll
plug Ola, man.
We got the Sam Carey Charity Classic Friday, August 4th coming up. I will be helping to coach, and obviously it's for a great cause. It'll be funding a youth league in Manchester, as well as honoring and supporting the late Sam Carey, who touched a lot of lives in not just the basketball community, but the community overall in the state of New Hampshire. So hopefully people come out and support.
Yeah, and it's an opportunity to see some of the great New Hampshire players of the past and the present as well in that event as well. And it's in one of the signature basketball events of the year here in the state of New Hampshire. And Rock On Fest is going to be awesome this year. We've talked about that with Luke on New Hampshire Now. But this is going to be the best year so far. It's going to be on Main Street in Concord. You and Luke are going to be doing a basketball clinic on that Friday night, the 11th, for kids to take in. And then it's going to be a movie on the State House lawn. We're going to watch Space Jam, one of the great basketball movies of all time. And the concert's on Saturday as well. So we'll talk more about that coming up on the program next week. We want to make sure everybody gets that on their calendars. It's going to be a lot of fun this year. This is going to be, as I mentioned, kind of the signature event so far for Rock On Fest. And not only just the basketball tournament, the basketball clinic, there's also going to be a tournament on Main Street as well going on throughout the couple days.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting to me. They're closing down Main Street, setting up some pop-up courts, and having it's not just like, hey, show up and we're going to play 3-on-3, like kind of like white men can't jump style. This is like an official FIBA regulation rules style tournament. So it's the real deal, and it's going to be pretty cool to be able to go and play basketball right there on Main Street, right in Main Street Concord, and have it be official rules and see who takes home the trophy.
And, of course, you know, Black Ice, the pond hockey tournament, takes place here in Concord during the winter, and you have individuals come from Canada and from all over New England and partake in that. And so that, as we Rock On builds this out, it's going to be something like that during the course of the summer, where individuals come from all over to play in this tournament, and that's really starting this year as well. It's going to be great. We talk about the need for more events in Concord to build upon the momentum of the Main Street project, and to have a two-day event, not at White Park this year, but smack dab in downtown Concord in the State House lawn It's going to be really the event of the summer in Concord, so we're certainly excited about that. As you referenced, there's not a lot going on in the NBA right now, but an interesting story came out earlier today, and that is that the Chicago Cubs are going to be giving Steve Bartman a World Series ring. And Bartman issued a statement, the Cubs issued a statement, and, you know, I don't know how I feel about that. I think that...
What's the backstory? For the listeners that don't know, what's the backstory?
Oh, Steve Bartman in 2000, for the listeners that don't know. In 2003, you may remember there's an individual who was wearing a Cubs hat, a Walkman headset, and glasses. And,
oh, okay.
And
okay.
He interfered with Moises.
Got his own 30 for 30 out of it, though.
Right, which I don't think he was very appreciative of. I don't think he... I think he hates the fact that he had a 30 for 30. Yeah, he wasn't like Mike and the Mad Dog, or like, yeah, it's going to maybe get me some couple million dollars. He was like, I don't think he's watched 30 for 30. So he interfered with play. His life has been ruined as a result of that. The Cubs were winning, and they were on their way to the World Series, and people blame him for the fact that the team imploded during the course of that inning. The broadcaster, Steve Lyons, kept harping on the fact that he, you know, did that. People released his name, and as a result, he has received hate, threats, you name it. And as you see in that 30 for 30, you know, he was even threatened moving out of state. Anyway, he gets a championship ring. And you know what? I think it's a good thing to bring closure to all this, and I think that's what they're hoping to do. I mean, is he worthy of a Cubs World Series championship ring? I don't know, but I think it's good. It's a good message to send that, you know, they're looking to, they understand what's happened, and if they've played any role in that, they're, you know, they're sorry, and they're hoping the Cubs fans forgive him, and there's an overture being made here, which I think is appropriate, you know, even if, you know, he's not necessarily worthy of the ring.
I got no problem with it. You know, he went through the ringer for that. Why not give the guy a ring? Heck.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, he didn't do anything to earn the ring. I mean, but, you know, but I guess he did. I mean, he took a lot of heat. He was, guy who got beat up, you know, verbally, and his life was ruined as a result of just a, you know, he made a mistake. He didn't even make a big mistake. I mean, he went for the baseball. Yeah, you're not supposed to interfere with the balls in play. Yes, you're supposed to give deference to your team at home, and not, you know, touch the ball. But you know what? He did what most fans would do in that same spot, which is why I always thought the thing was crazy.
Right.
In that he made a play.
Right. And I doubt, especially at that time, that most fans knew the rule. Like, they probably figured, hey, if I catch this, it'll be a home run.
Right.
Stands. I catch it, it's a home run. Like, give the guy a break.
Right. I agree. I think Bartman got, you know, wrongfully kind of assaulted through the years, and this ends that, even if, you know, he didn't really have anything to do with the Cubs winning the World Series. So we're okay with Bartman. The Red Sox right now are in a difficult spot. And, you know, we talked about the Red Sox over the course of this year, and there's been a feeling about how good this team should be. And, you know, going into tonight's game, I was looking at, you know, who am I going to interview for the show tonight? And you go down the lineup, and the roster, and the 25-man roster, and you're like, there's not too many guys that are kind of standing out right now for doing well over the last couple of weeks. You know, Chris Sale obviously has been awesome through the course of the year. Craig Kimbrell has been awesome through the course of the year. But other than that, I mean, particularly you look at the lineup, Eduardo Nunez has been great so far. But other than that, you look up and down the lineup, and you're like, there's not a lot happening here. And they have the Indians coming in for this three-game set, trade deadline today. And you know, you look at this team and you're expecting more, but it just has never felt like they're taking off. It's never felt like they have, you know, what it takes to be a championship team on the field, and they're just not on, you know, the roster sheet. And, you know, that's a concern. Is this team at any point in time going to take off? We've seen the Yankees get better at the deadline. I didn't think, you know, once the Red Sox went up by five games on the Yankees, I thought they were going to put the Yankees in the rearview mirror and win the division by, you know, 10 games, and the Rays were going to be a team that was going to compete with the Yankees. But the Yankees started to play a little better. The Yankees front office decided they were going to invest in this team. They made some trades to make the roster better. And now with, you know, the way the Red Sox are playing as compared to what we expected from Xander Bogaerts, Mookie Betts, Andrew Benintendi, and Hanley Ramirez on the offensive side of things, they are taking a step back to the Yankees at this point in time, and certainly can change over the next couple months, but it's not looking good for the Sox at this point.
I agree with you, but big picture-wise, still a long ways to go, and with that much talent, you got to think, hey, let's get to the playoffs, and that's when these guys are going to step up and earn their big contracts and step up and be heroes come the postseason. And obviously that's a gamble and not ideal. You want consistency going into playoffs. But, you know, I've read the book Moneyball, so obviously I'm an expert on this.
Clearly.
They say it constantly throughout. It's all about who's hot come playoffs.
Right.
And you have a roster of guys who are capable of getting hot. Can you get into the postseason and then have all those guys, have everything click and win a World Series? Or you go down in flames. Either way, it'll be entertaining. Chris, my jerk chicken
is here. It's here.
I'm going to have to bid you adieu.
I was hoping for some in-depth Patriots training camp chatter, but I guess we'll have to wait on that.
You know what? That's a lob. I'm going to let you knock that one out the park.
All right. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. Matt, enjoy your sandwich.
All right. Thank you.
When we come back, we'll do some more from Fenway Park and talk about the Red Sox as well as the National Baseball Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Some great interviews and conversations. Stay with us here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. Welcome back here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan inside America's most beloved ballpark, Fenway Park, where the Red Sox have been fading as of late. You're expecting a big trade deadline acquisition. It did not happen for the Red Sox. It did happen for the Yankees as they picked up perhaps the second best pitcher available on the market in right-hand starters, Sonny Gray. Yu Darvish, who I think is the best pitcher available, went to the Los Angeles Dodgers from the Texas Rangers. So the Red Sox decided to stand pat with what they have, let Rafael Devers and Eduardo Nunez play in the infield and figure out what they're going to do in regards to their starting rotation. And they do have a lot of quality arms in the bullpen. They have struggled a little bit late as of late there, but Addison Reed was picked up by the Red Sox from the New York Mets, and he's had two really good seasons. He's the closer pretty much by default for the Mets this year, but he is certainly a quality reliever coming to the Red Sox in exchange for three mid-level prospects. So the Red Sox open up a three-game series against the Cleveland Indians as we talk here on Monday night on the program, and this edition of the program presented by Concord Orthopedics, this segment of the show brought to you by the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. Red Sox enter play this week a half game behind the New York Yankees for first place in the American League East. This is not a place I don't think anybody expected to see the Red Sox a couple weeks ago, but the Red Sox have been reeling as of late. The Yankees have been winning. The Yankees winners of 8 of their last 10 games, while the Sox have been sliding, and therefore the Yankees have taken over first place. But I think that the worst thing for the Red Sox is that their slide coincided with the Yankees playing a little bit better, and as a result of that, the Yankees went all in. They acquired not just Sonny Gray, but Jaime Garcia, and also before that, Todd Frazier and David Robertson. They acquired four quality players, and as a result of that, they are perhaps the favorites now in the American League East. Even Dave Dombrowski, the Red Sox Executive Vice President of Baseball Operations, referring to the Yankees as the Golden State Warriors in reference to their now being stacked with stars. And the Yankees are ahead of schedule, too. I mean, they have the young players. They have some quality veterans now as well. And you look at the way they're playing, the way the Red Sox are playing, the deadline acquisitions that they made, and the Yankees are now the favorites, in my view, in the American League East. It's up to the Red Sox to stop the slide as they take on the Cleveland Indians here at Fenway Park. Then it's the Chicago White Sox for four games. That should be where the Red Sox do well before they go on the road for two in Tampa. Tampa has slid a little bit as of late, only two games over 500. Then they go to New York for three games before the Boston Red Sox will then head back home here for games against St. Louis, two against them, the Yankees for three more, and then to Cleveland for four contests.
So the schedule's not kind to the Red Sox, and their season, you know, whether or not they can win the division may be defined by how they play over the next couple weeks and bounce back from the lack of success they've had lately. So the Red Sox acquired Eduardo Nunez from the San Francisco Giants last week. He has paid immediate dividends. He has played well, and well enough to hit third in the game on Monday night. Here's my conversation with the newest member of the Boston Red Sox at the ballpark tonight. That is Eduardo Nunez.
1 week into your Red Sox career, what have been your takeaways? What have you enjoyed about being around this club so far?
My teammates. There's great people. There's great energy. A lot of talent. And I think that's the more important.
What's been the keys to your success this year? Offensively, this has been your best season so far. You've always been a good player, but this year you've obviously risen to a little bit different level in terms of your output. What's been the keys to your success?
You know, we had a little calm in Dominican. We Cano, Canacion, a lot of more players. And they helped me a lot. They helped me a lot. I learned from good players, good hitting, and I put in everything together.
Did something change in regards to your approach and how you work the count, or was it a mechanical type thing? What changed in terms of how you went about hitting and has allowed for that difference?
Everything come together. You know, your approach, your mind change, your mentally, how you be more in the league, you know how to pitch, you know how to count, you know, everything come together.
That's one of the hardest parts, obviously, for players is the mental side of things, where you obviously want to adjust, you want to change things, but you also have to come to the plate with, you know, a clear head and not overthink things. Is that one of the more difficult aspects for a player, and, you know, kind of coming to the plate with a clear mind each time and approaching it that way?
For sure. You wanna come to a clean mind when you gain a start, you know, but at the same time you wanna work in a couple of things to get better, you know, but you don't wanna may put this to the game in the same day. And that's the more hard part.
When you came up with the Yankees, you were regarded mostly as an infielder. You started playing the left field as well at the major league level. How important is that to be able to play multiple positions to kind of get your bat in the lineup all the time? And how much do you think that's going to help you here?
You know, when you're young, you don't realize how important that. Mm-hmm. You get mad when they move you to the position. But when you know you're getting more time in the big league, you know how important that. They give you more about, more playing time, and you'll be more important players.
What do you see as your strongest position?
I can play everywhere. Mm-hmm. I just have to practice and make more time in that position and every play.
In the early going here at Fenway Park, we've seen you and Rafael Devers in the lineup at the same time as Dustin Pedroia has been coming back from a couple of nagging injuries. What have you impressed you the most about Devers at 20, the way that he's approached the game?
You know, he's smart. He has a lot of talent. He just has to keep proving he can play in that level, in the high level. This is a hard league. It's a hard division. You know, so far he's doing really good. And he's really humble. He's humble. He want to learn. That's great.
Final thing, what is the mindset like for a player going from a situation in San Francisco where you're expected to be competing, that team's competing every single year, and obviously some injuries change things out there, to coming here to Boston where now you are in a pennant race, you're vying for first place. Is there a shift in how you approach things mentally, or is it just the same kind of process?
That's the same. You come to the stadium, to the ballpark, to win every single game, you know? You know, come to the ballpark to expect to lose. That's not the mind. And I think that's fun. That's fun. Come to the last place, come to the first place. That's why we work for them.
All right, Eduardo Nunez right there. For the Cleveland Indians, this is a story of trying to build upon last season and put a year in which they had a 3-1 series lead on the Chicago Cubs in the rearview mirror, but also trying to build upon that as well. Of course, Andrew Miller, former Red Sox pitcher, has been one of the best in baseball out of the bullpen over the last couple of years. You look at really since 2013, great numbers, dominant numbers, best in baseball type numbers for him over the last three seasons. A short time ago, I talked with Andrew Miller.
Wondering, you know, at what point here in Boston where things really changed for you in terms of your control and becoming, you know, the dominant pitcher you are today. Is there a particular point that you can pinpoint here, or a change that was made that allowed for the success, or did it just kind of, you know, happen for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a gradual, process. There was no moment, there was no light switch or, you know, button that was pushed, and just trying to work at it every day, trying to get better every day and you know, get to know my mechanics and find consistency and those repeatable, things you always hear, the same cliches you always hear, I think they're true. And, you know, as nice as it would have been to have, you know, one magic, you know, thing said to me or move made, it wasn't that simple. Just, you know, like I said, fortunately ended up with a lot of good people around me and worked towards that goal.
From your time in Boston, I mean, you're one of the more intellectual players that you'll find. And, you know, you study the game, you study players, you, you know, determine what is the best thing to do in various spots as a result of that you know, intellectual curiosity. How does that benefit you, or does it, in a game which, you know, it thrives on, you know, consistency and, you know, kind of simplifying things?
Yeah, I think for me, I think that, you know, earlier in my career when I didn't have that consistency, you know, there wasn't that much homework I could do that would, you know, be useful to me in a game situation. I had to kind of stick more to what I was doing well at the time. And then as I found, you know, the ability to command the ball better, it's come into play more often. But you know, ultimately, it's still, you know, there's still cycles. There's days when I can, you know, take a lot of information out there and put it to use, and there's other days where I'm kind of fighting myself and just kind of trusting what I, you know, what my usual kind of go-to method is. So, you know, I feel like it's something as I've gotten older and, you know, gotten a little bit better, fortunately, that has come more into play. But, you know, it's I think every player needs to find, you know, what works for them. So,
do you study more on, you know, hitters or more on, you know, what guys like you, whether it's, you know, back in the day with Raleigh Fingers and Goose Gossage, or guys with, you know, similar physiques and arm slots like Chris Sale or Randy Johnson have done in the past? I mean, is there anything that you take from previous players, or do you have to just do your thing and more looking at the hitter side?
You know, from, you know, when you mentioned players from other generations or whatnot, no, I'm not trying to learn from them in a sense that I would watch their film or look up anything. I, you know, you mentioned Goose. I, you know, was fortunate enough to be around him in spring training. Every time, you know, people like that talk, you want to be all ears and take in as much, and you can learn a lot from those conversations. But you mentioned Sale. He pops up in my, you know, scouting report stuff on a pretty regular basis, and it's fun to watch. We don't exactly compare. He's a starting pitcher. He's got a change up. You know, he throws differently, but, you know, it's a lot of fun to watch in that sense. And, you know, I think there is something I can grab from him sometimes on maybe how he, you know, faced a guy where he threw his breaking ball, something like that. But, you know, ultimately I'm studying, you know, when it comes to for games, the other team and their tendencies and, you know, maybe, you know, things they might do or things that, you know, they might be looking for. So, you know, that's kind of where it's at. I do enjoy the history side of it, but I'm not using that so much for, you know, personal.
Right. Final thing, I was talking to Kluber before, and, you know, about whether or not this season is kind of a continuation of last year, whether this is a season onto, you know, itself, where certainly you guys feel like there's some unfinished business. Great year last year, made some additions. Do you feel like that's the, you know, the mentality this team has, or this is a, you know, separate entity? And, you know, around here, whether it's the Red Sox or the Yankees in the past, there's always kind of that eye towards October while the players stay consistent with what's going on in the day in, day out basis. But do you see it that way, or is this just, you know, this 2017, 2016 happened and that was that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's impossible for us to forget about what happened last year. I think we're all very proud of it, and, you know, there's so many faces in here that got to experience that, you know, certainly we're not running from that or, you know, anything. But ultimately it is a new year. We don't get to carry any of our record over from last year. We don't get any, you know, sort of advantage from, you know, having played those games. You know, hopefully that experience makes us better. Hopefully, you know, I think everybody enjoyed that experience and it drives them to get back there. But, you know, ultimately, you know, 2017 is where we're at right now, and, you know, we have to, you know, take care of business this year. We don't get any sort of bump from last year.
All right, Andrew Miller right there here on the program as the Red Sox get ready to take on the Cleveland Indians for three games, and also had an opportunity to catch up with the Indians' top starting pitcher, Corey Kluber, who will not pitch in this series. The Red Sox do catch a break there as they do not have to go up against the ace of the Cleveland Indians, while their ace, Chris Sale, does go in the game on Tuesday. You know, for Kluber, it's once again been a phenomenal season for him. He was one of the big reasons that they were in the World Series last year, no question about that. He's 8-3 with a 2.90 ERA this season. And I talked with Corey Kluber, the ace of the Indian staff.
Corey, each player will generally talk about the fact that a season is unique onto itself, and that, you know, you turn the page from one season to the next. But does this season in some ways feel like, you know, kind of an extension to last year, given, you know, how close you were and what you guys are looking to accomplish, or is it unique onto itself?
I mean, I definitely think that it's unique. I think every season is its own, but I think that there's maybe a feeling of, you know, I'm unfinished business or whatever you want to call it. I don't know if we put a label on it, but I think that, you know, we definitely feel like we want to first and foremost get back to the postseason, and then, you know, if we are able to accomplish that goal, then I think that, you know, we have the idea in mind to try to, you know, get that one more win in the postseason that we weren't able to last year.
Obviously, your starts fall where they're going to fall, and but is there a desire on your part of when you see a series like this against the Red Sox, and obviously postseason success against them last year? You know, is there a desire of kind of wishing that your dates had fallen so that you could pitch in this series here at Fenway?
Like you said, I mean, that's something that you can't get too worried about the teams you're pitching against and when that lines up. We play them for three games. We got five or six starters right now, so chances are that it might or it might not work, but we also play them later on in the year at home, so you can't get too wrapped up in whether or not you pitch against a team during a certain series, because chances are that it's going to come back around again. You'll probably get a chance to face them.
Is there also a danger in self-evaluating your team this year and saying, okay, Brantley's here, Encarnacion is here, the starters are more healthy than they were during last year, and that automatically that means that the team is going to be better than last year? Because we see it all the time here with championship teams in Boston, where a team will win a championship, they'll make several additions, they'll be like, okay, the team's going to be even better than this year. Does that happen within the context of a ball club, where you see acquisitions and you think that you may be better based upon those acquisitions?
I hope not. I think that ideally, like we first talked about, each season is unique to itself, and there's plenty of factors within our ball club that are different than last year, and also other teams. So I think just to say that we got Edwin or Brantley's healthy or things like that, our rotation, I don't think that just those things automatically mean that we're a better team last year. I think each team has to learn how to win in itself.
For you, where did everything click? Everybody, their baseball journey is different. Sometimes people experience failure at the beginning of their careers. Sometimes they automatically have success from the moment they step on the ball field. For you, at what point did you click and become Corey Kluber, the number one of the best pitchers in baseball?
I think it's always a gradual process for everybody, even though some guys have success. I think there's always, they might be more advanced than other people at that point in their career. But I think that, you work throughout your minor league career to try to get into a spot to where you come here and you're able to have success and learn and continue to improve. And I think that, that's the way I look at it, is that I'm always looking to find something to improve on and always trying to get better. I don't think anybody is content with where they're at.
How do you balance the willingness and wanting to improve with you have pitches that are really, really good and you can get guys out on a very consistent level, and that, and there's that mentality of I can obviously get guys out when I need to get them out, but also kind of the mental side of things, where you want to work new things in, you want to say, well, maybe I could do even better than I'm doing right now. How do you balance the consistency aspect versus kind of the mental side of things, where you want to improve?
I think it's just trying to become more consistent every day. Mm-hmm. I think that a guy might have a great swing, or a guy might have a good arsenal, but just to be able to repeat that over and over and over again, I think that's the ultimate goal that everybody strives for, is to reach that level of consistency, and I think that's what everybody's working toward.
All right, Corey Kluber right there. I head up to Cooperstown as well as part of WKXL On the Road. We want to thank our sponsors for that. Paradigm Plumbing, Heating, Air Conditioning, as well as Choices in H Addiction Recovery, Dennehy and Boulay, the Spradling Group, and the Greater Concord Chamber of Commerce, all helping us to take this show on the road to places like here at Fenway Park and also to Cooperstown, New York, this past weekend. On the players' side, it was Jeff Bagwell, Tim Raines, and Ivan Rodriguez all going into the Hall of Fame, and also going in executive in John Scherholz, builder of the Royals championship team in the 80s and the Braves championship team in the 1990s, and former commissioner Bud Selig. Talked with a couple of the guys. We'll hear those interviews now, and we'll go a little more in-depth with our Hall of Fame conversations in the next segment here of the program. But we'll start with conversation with Ivan Rodriguez. And Pudge, in my view, is the greatest catcher of all time, and he paid some deference to Johnny Bench in an interview on Fox. Actually came in during the course of the interview and said, no, this guy's the best of all time. But in my view, in fact, it is Pudge Rodriguez, who is the greatest of all time, and I caught up with him.
I'm a humble player. I mean, I can say There's so many great ones in the game that I respect them a lot. I know that that my career was great. You know, just defensively and offensively. And offensively, I did a great job. But basically, I didn't do it for myself. I just do it to win games because I was a player that loved to win games and just do the best that I can on the field to win games.
What does it mean to you, though, when people refer to you as arguably the greatest catcher of all time?
I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you for that. I mean, I think that's what you get when you play hard. You know, when you respect the game, when you go out there and play the game hard, play 27 outs as hard as you can, and care for 45,000-plus people watching you play, you know, they love to see that, you know, and I respect that for my whole career, and that's one of the things that I always teach to young kids today. You know, go out there and do the best, play the game hard, do everything you can defensively, offensively to be the best that you can. But most important is then every time you put that uniform, respect that uniform, and go out there and win for your team.
When you reflect upon being here, what is the balance between, you know, the hard work that you mentioned before and the natural ability? I mean, was it the hard work that got you to this point along with the natural ability, or which is bigger in your view?
Well, I always have a very good ability since I started playing baseball. You know, I played baseball when I was 6-7 years old, and I always had that. You know, I always got that good arm and you know, good hands playing third base. But later on, yes, obviously you need to have discipline, you need to stay strong mentally, and you need to work, and you need to prepare yourself. Day in and day out, not only a month or two, it's a year thing preparation. And I did it through my whole career. I have trainers, chef, and families and people at home that not too many guys knows the support that I have behind me, mm-hmm. You know, just for me to go out there and play the game. You know, I always say that I'm a Hall of Famer. Yes, I'm talking to you as a Hall of Famer, but those guys they're behind scenes, they're Hall of Famers too, because they're always there with me. You know, especially Jose and Eva, which is my parents, they're always there with me day in and day out. My brother, they're all with me, you know, supporting me day in and day out, and that's about it.
Pudge Rodriguez right there. Also really loved Tim Raines, watching him growing up with the Yankees in 96 and 98. The White Sox prior to that, I was a little too young for his times in Montreal. But that's where a lot of the fans, you know, in our neck of the woods in New Hampshire and Vermont remember him from, in the heyday of the Montreal Expos in the 1980s. Here is Tim Raines.
Yeah, it took me 10 years to get here. At one time, I felt I wasn't sure if it was going to happen. But the day came last, January. And, I don't think saying the words of excited does it justice.
The 10 years are obviously hard, but does that those 10 years make this moment even more special given how long you had to wait?
Oh, definitely, definitely. And I think, you know, regardless of how long it takes, as long as you're in here, it really doesn't matter. I think the keys to it all is, you know you had a great career, regardless if you make it or not. You know, I always felt that it wouldn't change how I felt about, you know, the way I played, the 23 years that I played. So, it just makes it extra special, to know that you're going to be remembered forever for the way you played the game.
Boggsy was talking about being around, you know, Mr. Aaron and all the great players. Is that humbling for you?
Definitely, definitely. Not only, you know, humbling because, you know, I used to watch those guys when I was a kid. And then not only that, you know, I played with a lot of these guys that are in here. I played with them. I played against them. And I know a lot of them. So, you know, this is the pinnacle of baseball. You know, when you're a kid, you strive to be a major leaguer, and then once you become a major leaguer, you want to win a world championship, and then, you know, you hope that your career lasts long enough and you put up enough numbers that you can one day come here. So I'm very fortunate and blessed that I was able to achieve it all, really.
Tim, what does it say for the legacy of the Montreal Expos now to go in and also with Andre and Gary Carter?
Oh, it says a lot. I mean, I don't think there's any other team in baseball can say that they had as many Hall of Famers, original players from the original team at the Expos. I mean, the three of us, and probably Vladimir maybe next year or the next or whenever, but he's definitely going to be in. That's four players from that organization. It's kind of weird to hear that they're no longer having an organization. So hopefully it makes a statement that, you know, even though we played north of the border, there were some good baseball players that came out of there.
All right, more from Tim Raines coming up in just a little bit. We'll also talk with Andre Dawson, his teammate with the Montreal Expos and a fellow Hall of Famer. And we'll hear from Wade Boggs as well on Tim Raines, who he won a World Series with in 1996 with the New York Yankees. And an extended conversation with Boggs as well, who says that last year having his number retired, as I look out at it on the right field, above the right field grandstand at Fenway Park, really completed his baseball career. So we'll talk about that with Wade Boggs, also hear from Tim Raines, Andre Dawson, and more Hall of Famers when we return here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. This segment of the show brought to you by the Prescription Center. Welcome back here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan inside Fenway Park here on the program, and there's been a lot of kvetching about the fact the Boston Red Sox are not playing well enough, and I think that's fair. I think this Red Sox team is underachieving. You look up and down the lineup, you're wondering, you know, where is Mookie Betts of last year? Where is Xander Bogaerts of last year? Where is the Andrew Benintendi that we expected? Where is Hanley Ramirez hitting like he's being paid? Mitch Moreland, formerly like the guy in the first half of the season. And I think that's all fair. I think that the assessment is fair, but let's not go crazy here. The Red Sox are not trending in the right direction, that is true, but this team is only half game out of first place. And who doesn't love a pennant race? This guy does. I mean, everybody should love a pennant race. And the Red Sox, the Yankees are back. The Yankees made some moves. The Red Sox didn't really make any significant moves, but you know, had the better team going into things. Now, where things stand now, as I said before, I think the Yankees have moved a little bit ahead of the Red Sox right now. This is going to be fun, and it's going to be a fun second half of the season. I had a lot of fun up in Cooperstown this past weekend watching one of my favorite players, Tim Raines, go into the National Baseball Hall of Fame. I did not see him play in Montreal, but I did certainly go up to Montreal a number of times. I'm hopeful that baseball returns, and did see Tim Raines play when I was growing up in New York with the Yankees, where he was from 1996, 97, and 98. He won two World Series with the Yankees at that point, and Wade Boggs was one of his teammates.
Oh, Rock, he was an outstanding teammate. I'm so happy for him, and you know, it's well-deserved. It took a long time for him to get in, but when you look at just his stats alone, I mean, he deserves to be here, and well-deserved, and great teammate. I love him to death.
All right, that is Wade Boggs talking about Tim the Rock Raines. So does this help? Does Tim Raines going into the Hall of Fame help baseball potentially return to Montreal? And I say yes. I think that we're seeing an upwards trend, a feeling that it is time that Montreal can support and deserves another team. I think the stadium issue is huge. But, you know, when you have a player go into the Hall of Fame as a Montreal Expo, I think it certainly helps. I talked with Tim Raines about that.
But there's always a time. I don't see it happening, you know, tomorrow or next year or maybe the year after, but there is a chance. You know, I think there's still a chance that maybe the Devil Rays, if things don't work out in St. Pete, Maybe they would move the franchise to Montreal. And if that doesn't happen, maybe somewhere down the line, if they decide to bring in some new teams, that they would think about it being in Montreal.
How important is it to you personally to see the Expos come back, given obviously you're going in as an Expo and to have a future team there? Is it important to you personally?
Definitely. Definitely personally. I mean, you know, in 04, when the last week of the season, that last year, I was in the organization, and they brought me in for those last 4 days, and it was probably the most emotional I ever been at a baseball game for losing a team. So it means a lot to me, and I know it really means a lot to the city of Montreal and their fans, and I personally feel like if they do get a team back, I try my best to try to be a part of that.
How big a piece was your ability to steal bases to you being in the Hall of Fame? Obviously, you're working with guys in the Blue Jays organization and trying to mentor, you know, those skills. Is that as big a piece as any in terms of your repertoire as a player to why you're here?
Well, I feel like it played a big role. I mean, it wasn't the only role, I think. You know, I won a batting title. I drove in a lot of runs as a leadoff guy. There's not many leadoff guys that drive in runs, especially back in those days. I was definitely a decent defender in the outfield. So I feel like it wasn't just the stolen bases. I think there's a few other things that played a role in me being here.
All right, Tim Raines right there. Also caught up with Andre the Hawk Dawson, who in his days in Montreal, he was one of the best players in baseball, where he was a guy who could do just about everything. Some knee issues slowed him down during his time in Chicago, and really when he came here to Boston in 93 and 94. I caught up with Andre Dawson in Cooperstown.
I was with you in 2010 here at the golf course, and you were going to the Hall of Fame, and you were with Tim Raines, and you talked about how you hoped that the moment was going to come for him as well at some point. What does it mean to you that that moment has arrived?
Well, I'm very ecstatic for Timmy and finally his journey here to Cooperstown. Can't say enough about how I'm looking forward to his induction in, you know, a day or so. And it's an amazing time. It's an amazing time for fans of Montreal as, you know, their quest to hopefully see baseball return. Kind of let this be a stepping stone as part of that process.
And I think that's incredibly significant because now with you, with Rock, with Gary Carter, with Vladimir Guerrero, it really legitimizes in a lot of ways what happened in Montreal, and I think adds to that movement in an extension of what we've seen up there at the sold-out games. Red Sox were up there a couple years ago, sold out for the exhibition games, and it seems like this adds further momentum to Montreal regaining perhaps a team in the near future.
Yeah, I think, you know, the fans are starved for baseball. The country, the city, the province, indeed missed the game itself. You know, you really hate to see a city lose an organization, lose a franchise, but I think they've taken the right steps in trying to bring a team back.
All right, that is the Hawk, Andre Dawson. So many interviews from the Baseball Hall of Fame. We're going to sprinkle some in on the program over the next couple of weeks. Brooks Robinson, as well as Rod Carew, Goose Gossage. Talked with all of them in Cooperstown, Tom Glavine as well, and we'll try to sprinkle some of those in throughout the course of the program. You can also go to our website, ConcordNewsRadio.com, where you can find all of the Hall of Fame interviews from my trip to Cooperstown. Thanks for joining us for The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord or the Peaks. We'll be back with you next week, and have a great rest of the day, everybody.
Some days are diamonds, some days are rocks. Some doors are open, some roads are blocked. Sundowns are golden, then fade. do nothing. I get your back someday, 'cause you got a heart so big. If you crush this town, and I can't hold out forever, even walls fall down. And all around your island, there's a barricade. It keeps out the danger. Heart so big, it could crush this.